The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
Welcome back. There's a bit of silence there while we all disappeared to the loo. Sorry about that. We're back. We're back with the Business Bunker show here on Channel Radio in association with Biz Radio. You're listening to me, Paul Andrews, and the absolutely wonderful Zeenat Nirani.
Hola, hola, hola.
I beg your pardon?
Hola. ¿Cómo estás? Hola.
Oh, she's getting all foreign now.
Come on.
Bit of Spanish, was that?
Ooh la la, mon chéri. I'm going French now.
She's all over it, isn't she, eh? Blimey.
You didn't tell me I'd have to speak French for this.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
can you not see it?
It makes a difference, Helen. We normally speak double Dutch on this programme.
Oh, that's all right. I'm in the right place then.
Yeah. An awful lot of waffling, isn't there?
I've had a tweet from Tracy Ferguson, lovely Tazzy 64. She says, this is a fab idea. I've just downloaded the app.
Thank you, Tracy.
Yeah, so that's good stuff.
Let me have a look. Yeah, I've downloaded it, but I haven't gone into it yet.
Martin Reeves of Collectors Buddy. Thank you for my Business Bunker shout out. The What's On app sounds very useful. I'm going to download it.
Great. So good there stuff, you Martin.
Go. Yeah. So cool stuff.
God, people are speedy when they.
I can plan all my summer stuff on there, all my summer events on it.
Yeah, exactly.
Definitely.
Cool. Good. What you got, Zeenat? You can read us an email or a tweet.
Yeah, let me read an email because my phone's frozen again.
Oh, blimey.
This one's exciting because it's based in Bromley.
From where?
Bromley.
Oh, so you've been there, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been there.
The London Borough of Bromley in Kent.
Absolutely. The Bromley Pageant of Motoring has been running at Norman Park. Norman Park's brilliant. That's where Dina Asher-Smith's from. She's brilliant. Bromley in Kent for almost 40 years. This year it will take place on Sunday the 12th of June. The show is organised by the experienced AME event manager who understands events from both operations and exhibitors' perspectives. Under licence from the Kelsey Publishing Limited. With up to 10,000 visitors from across the southeast in London, the event, which features the famous one make parking for classic and modern classic cars, car clubs, live action arena and fun fair, is a great family day out. It also has a packed trade area featuring key automotive brands as well as local businesses. The Bromley Pageant of Motoring is a fantastic opportunity to promote your business with a range of trade. It's sizzling hot. Motoring. Range of trade stands options from auto jumble to premium retail, as well as sponsorship opportunities to suit all budgets. You can sell the and promote direct to the public in a relaxed and welcoming atmosphere. So if you want more information, you can go to the 3ws.bromleypageant.co.uk or you can call Laura at andmedia.co.uk. I can't see with my glasses either. Or why not call 01233228754. I need new glasses.
Yeah, you need an optician. Specsavers is what you need.
Nah. You know what happens when you go to Specsavers?
I don't know. What happens?
That's for another story.
Oh, right. Okay. I see what you did there.
Ha 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 ha! You're so funny. Got that one.
The Construction Expo 22 is happening in September at the K2 Event Centre in Crawley. It's the place to meet loads of construction professionals from the South East, London, and the UK. 87% of business directors agree it's easier to communicate face-to-face than by phone, email or Zoom. To get your free ticket to the event, go to www.construction-expo-uk.co.uk. That's www.construction-expo-uk.co.uk for your free ticket to attend the Construction Expo South East at the K2 Event Centre in Crawley.
Lovely. Ooh. Ever wanted to own your own wine producing business? Well, fancied owning your very own wine producing business? Well, for 1.5 million only, you can now do exactly that.
We'll have a whip round later.
Artisan sparkling wine producer Barnsall, based in Staple between Canterbury and Sandwich. Sorry.
What?
Sorry, it's my brain. It's the way it's running.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, it's running off. Canterbury and Sandwich is being sold lock, stock and barrel after the current owners decided to retire. So the award-winning business has been run by Philip and Sally Watts for the last 10 years. Barnsall Vineyard is one of the oldest in Kent, with planting first when planting first started in 1993. I was born then.
Were you? Only just.
Yeah, today it grows varieties including Chardonnay, Pinot Noir and Bacchus. It is also trailing Rubham Pinot, England's only indigenous vine, with the first wine expected to hit the shelves in 2024.
Wow.
Yeah, it's great.
It's funnily enough, the wine business has become a major industry in Kent now, worth quite a few billion pounds. We've got about 24 wineries and stuff. Even the French have moved in, haven't they?
Yeah, we've got quite a lot of vineyards in North Kent.
Yeah, there's a lot of them about, and there's one of the big champagne companies. I can't remember which one bought a vineyard in Kent on the North Downs.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have more sort of wines that are locally produced here. I think
Balfour
it's really
Winery,
important.
They're one of our partners.
Where are they?
Yeah, we were there last week. They do some stunning.
It's a fantastic place, isn't it? It's a really good place to visit,
especially on a beautiful day as well.
Yeah, yeah.
Sitting outside with a drop of they can't call it champagne, but they're sparkling wines, are first class.
Mm.
Yeah, really
lovely.
Nice.
Bit of wine tasting, champagne tasting with some cheese. And grapes.
That sounds very good.
It does, doesn't it?
Right, shall we talk to our next guest?
I think so.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? It's an absolute pleasure to welcome onto the Business Monkey Show Helen Fuchs of View IT Training. Helen, good afternoon. Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for asking me to come on, Paul.
It's an absolute pleasure. Why don't you kick off by telling us a bit about Helen, a bit about your background, and then a bit about View IT Training.
Okay, I'm Helen, and View IT Training, we do computer training. So we basically teach people to use their computers. And it's mainly for work, because I was working with so many people and I was finding they didn't know how to use their computer properly. They were struggling with it. Okay, let's just wind back a few years.
Mm.
When I first started using computers, that was quite a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
They never worked.
They still don't.
They still don't.
They still don't. But
they never did what you wanted them to.
Yeah.
And I thought there must be an easier way. You know, if I could tap into what those computers were doing and why they weren't working, I could actually get them to do things to make my life easier.
Sure.
So that's what I started doing. And now, fortunately, they have got easier, and they do. We do have occurrences when these things work. But I try and pass that knowledge on to other people because I think, and a lot of you out there are running small businesses, you know, you're busy doing your thing.
Yeah.
Nick's busy doing his app, and that's what you want to be doing.
Yeah.
You don't want to be fighting with the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And if you fight with it, it often says no.
Yeah.
It does. And one thing I say to my, when I'm doing my training courses, I say, you're not going to win an argument with the computer.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's always going to win.
So give us an overview of the kind of I'm sure you do a whole range of things, but what are the basic things that you're helping people with? Are these mostly like office-based packages?
Yeah, so I tend to specialize in Microsoft Office.
Yeah.
So a lot of what I'm doing is Excel, spreadsheets.
Yeah.
I know you were talking
the
about spreadsheets
last week.
Paul.
Oh, we'll have a conversation about that in a minute. Yeah.
Office 365, Teams.
All right.
And that became more used in the pandemic. So a lot of people were using Zoom.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had to. It was forced into our homes, wasn't it? You know.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft developed Teams, and now companies are using that to collaborate on.
Yeah.
And that's really quite important. And then the other one I get involved with is Outlook, because.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how many emails you lot have got in your inboxes. And some people have got thousands.
Yeah. I've got 10,000. Yeah.
Billions.
Yeah.
And it's about trying to get people to manage that, to work smarter. Because I actually think having that many emails can be quite oppressive.
Mm.
And you look at it and you just think, oh, my goodness, I can't deal with this. So some of that is just mentally wanting to be able to organise them better, so it helps you organise your day. And then the other things I do are just trying to keep people up to date, because a lot of us, we did training sort of the big early, oh my god, this is gonna make me sound so old, but 20 years ago.
I bet I could beat you.
we did training 20 years ago.
Mm-mm.
And it's changed since then. You know, things have moved on. So
No, it hasn't. I started in the computer industry 51 years ago. And it's the same now as it was then. Almost.
And the computer still says no.
And it still says no. It still doesn't do what you think it's going
to
do.
It's a bit like talking to a plant. You've got to talk to it and nurture it.
Do you know what? I think you're onto something there. I think sometimes they smell fear.
So when you're doing something and it can
smell that fear, and it's like, I know you're scared, so I'm not going to do it.
It's interesting, isn't it? The Microsoft Office packages. I don't know if you know. With the introduction of the personal computer, in the late 70s, the personal computers have been around for a little while, but they weren't really taking off because it was the only thing you could do with it was they came with a basic compiler, so you could write little programs.
So
unless you were a geek, why would you want a personal computer? It didn't do anything. And then somebody invented a killer app. What's known as a killer app, and the very first killer app was a thing called VisiCalc, which was a spreadsheet developed by Software Arts, who then changed their name to VisiCorp, and it ran on an Apple II, and it made the machine viable, and it suddenly became an office machine, whereas it hadn't before. That was 78-79. The interesting thing is my skills with spreadsheets hasn't changed since 1979.
I was going to say that, because the stuff that's in there, and probably a lot of people don't realise what you're saying, Paul, is still originates back from the original spreadsheets. And they've put other bells and whistles in to make it easier.
Yeah, but that's my bit.
If Paul picks it up, he could still use exactly what he did back then.
The funny thing is, after all that, I mean, I installed one of the very first versions of VisiCalc onto an Apple II.
You're not still using it, are you?
I wish I was, because I know how to use it.
It's in his shed.
I don't actually have that Apple machine. I actually had an IBM PC from 1982, which was only the second one imported into the UK, because when IBM launched them, they weren't available in Europe. They were only available in the US. And I worked in the US at the time, and I was on my way back to England, and I bought one and brought it back.
I bet it weighed a ton.
It certainly did, getting it on a plane was a laugh.
There goes your weight limit.
So I left the wife there. But the thing about VisiCalc was that it was a killer app. It was something that people could use that made the personal computer usable by ordinary people and not by geeks. Now, the funny thing is, I'm one of those people that I don't use products often enough to remember how to use them, if you see what I mean. Yeah. So, for instance, I've got a spreadsheet, an Excel spreadsheet, that I wrote 10 years ago. And I haven't touched it. I use it every month, but I haven't touched it. Yeah. And then the other day, I had to upgrade something. I had to change something. And do you think I could remember how to change the cells?
That's so frustrating.
And I'm going, I haven't done this for years. So I tried to just copy it and change the numbers, and it didn't work and all the rest of it. And then, because us techies, the last thing you will ever do is read the manual. Yeah.
Because
that's an admission of defeat. Yeah.
That's the
globe
thing.
Yeah.
I don't read manuals for anything.
I used to work as a systems programmer on mainframes, and I worked with a guy called Graham Bailey, and Graham and I used to sit there, and we had a sign above our desk that said RTFM, okay, and people used to come in, they go, how do you do this? And we both just point upwards, and they go, what's that? And read the freaking manual.
I would be asking if I read the manual.
Oh no, you would, because the manual's made no sense. In an IBM manual, every other page had a thing on it that said, this page is intentionally left blank, and that was the most meaningful page in the whole manual.
Jeez.
But this is the problem. Seriously, the two issues that I see here, Ellen, is that in the early days of these products, they were fairly straightforward, and you couldn't do a huge amount with them. Over the years, they've been embellished and embellished, and there's bells and whistles and all kinds of things. The problem is that makes it more complicated. So for people like me that don't use it very often, you've got to wade your way through all that complication to get back to the basics. So, for instance, under VisiCalc, this is how easy it was. You highlight a column, and at the bottom, the command was equal sum. That's it. Yeah. You tried doing that in Excel, it just doesn't work. Yeah.
And I think what you're saying is true, Paul, because there's so much in them.
Yeah.
And one thing I'm trying to do, or I do on my courses, is I think, well, what do they need to know? What do people need to know to perform their jobs?
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, it's like, how can I make my life easier? Or how can I make my staff more productive?
Yeah.
And if I can make them understand this is what you need to know, and also we talk about why it does something, because sometimes I think understanding why it wants the computer, why have I got to have the mouse that shape? Why does this suddenly do this? Mm. Why has this appeared over there? So we do a lot of the why, and I do that because I think then it sticks.
Yeah, absolutely.
And if it sticks...
There's a purpose, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah. And once it sticks in there, it just makes them be able to carry on. But it is, as you say, there is so much in there... Mm. And you're never going to know everything.
And that's the thing, and that's what I love about what you're saying and what you're doing, yeah, that, you know, most people don't want to be an expert in a product in its entire glory, yeah? Unless you're a programmer or someone like yourself that's training in it, most end users do not need to know every little
formula
thing and every formula and everything that goes into a product. What they need to know is how to do the things they want to do.
Yeah. And how to get, because their boss wants that report.
Yeah.
They want those figures. How do they get those figures to look like this?
Yeah, exactly.
And that is what I'm trying to get them the answer to. Yeah. And, you know, we talk to people. I love going into companies and finding out what they do. I think that's so interesting because, you know, you see... And once you get an understanding of how that company works, it helps you then work together with them to build a course and to say, right, okay, this is what you need.
Mm.
And hopefully by that time, I think there's several aspects to it. There's the confidence as well, because some people do lack confidence in their computer skills.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there's those people who want to know but just haven't been given those little tweaks to work it out.
Mm.
So there's a couple of aspects of what I do. And then just working with people and making them feel that they can answer the questions. A lot of people say, oh, you can just Google it. And you can. I'm all for Googling stuff. I think Google is great.
Mm.
But you can't Google it if you don't know what you're looking for.
That's the problem,
and
isn't
it's
it?
It's a time thing as well, though, isn't it? How much time you end up spending. And I'm sure a lot of the people that come to you is like they spend hours trying to figure out how to do something that's so basic, but because they've got a fear of it going wrong, they can't do it.
Yes. Yeah.
But one thing I wanted to ask you was that you've got all these Excel sheets, and this is where I struggle, because I only want the basics to be able to do what I need to do. And if you do it on Microsoft, you've got your Excel sheet, but then if you're doing off the Google Excel sheet, it's different. It doesn't translate exactly the same.
So
and I have issues with that.
It's a bit like, it's a bit like different car brands. So you'll have, Ford will have their own way of doing cars, and Renault have their own way of doing cars, but they all kind of drive.
Mm.
So Google have got their own spreadsheet, and Microsoft have got their own spreadsheet. Now, according to which one you drive is entirely up to you.
Mm.
Both have got pluses. Personally, I prefer Excel because that's what I've always worked in.
Mm.
And some of the problem people find is when they're stuck in the middle, a lot of companies will make a decision and say, we're going to use Excel, we're going to use the Office Suite, we're going to use the 365, which is like the all-encompassing sharing product. But I think it's more difficult when companies are split between it. And I think you've kind of got to go one way or the other and say, right, are we going to use Microsoft products or are we going to use Google products? That is my personal opinion.
Yeah, I mean, without being funny, and I just say this for because it's something that drives me potty as a business person. There are far too many organisations now that try to manipulate what you're doing. Yeah. You know, I'm an Apple user these days, and I use Zoom, And I use Zoom for a very specific reason, because Zoom on the free version allows me to record interviews, which Teams doesn't on a free. And anyway, I wouldn't use Teams because I hate Microsoft. But
say no more.
Yeah, but somebody invited me to a meeting the other day, and they said, right, it's on Teams. Oh, okay. I said, download the app. So straight off, you have to download an app, which you don't do on Zoom. Zoom's just a web-based. It's a web-based program. But you have to download an app. So I download an app on my phone, and before I know anything, I've got half a dozen things all going off, and I've got a calendar being filled in, and I go, And you've got invites for things, and you go, hold on a minute, that's not even the calendar I use. Yeah, it's just the one that you ship with your product, and now you've just decided that my diary is going to be run on your product. And I hate that. Mm. I hate that with a vengeance. The funny thing about it is, if you're in that environment, it's probably brilliant because you don't do anything. Yeah,
yeah.
You do one thing, and then Microsoft goes, well, you can do this, and this. And everyone goes, oh, that's nice. It's magic. Yeah. But if you're not in that environment, it's just bloody annoying. Yeah. It worries me that technology has got to that point where a lot of us aren't in control of it anymore, and it does stuff without asking us, if you see what I mean. But interestingly, coming back to the point that you were making, as an Apple user, there's Apple ships with three really simple products.
Yes, he's got numbers,
pages, and keynote. Yeah, yeah. They ship with that. They're very basic products. Yeah. So the spreadsheet numbers is much more like VisiCalc, and I'm much more at home with that. It's really quite simple. But the interesting thing, though, is you can do a spreadsheet in it, and then you can save it as an Excel spreadsheet.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah. And that's where it can get a bit funny, because sometimes it throws a wobbly and goes, oh, I don't know what you were trying to do there, but it doesn't work in Excel, whatever you were trying to do, so you get a funny result in it. But from your point of view, Helen, in trying to teach people these kind of things, it must be fairly interesting for you to try and ascertain what it is people are trying to work out.
I think that's a big part of my role, is trying to sort of say, like, where you come from, what you're using now, where do you want to be, and sometimes, if they are using Google Sheets, and that is the path they need to go down, or if they're using Apple products, that's the path they want to stick with.
Yeah.
But if there's an organisation that they're using Microsoft products, you kind of got to stick with that and use that. And then, and there is some crossover. And so I think when you've used one spreadsheet, you can use the others.
Yeah.
But I kind of think it does get very difficult, because you're trying to go between different products, and it probably is like trying to drive three different types of cars.
Yeah,
it is. They all work. They do the same thing. They get you from A to B, but they get there slightly differently. They drive slightly differently.
One is a right click, one's a left click.
Yeah. The gearbox is in a slightly different place.
Yeah.
And that makes it a little bit more tricky.
Yeah. It's the funny thing is, years ago, when I worked as a technical consultant, we used to talk about infrastructure platforms.
Mm-hmm.
So you go into an organization and you go, right, what's our infrastructure platform? What's our standard operating environment? And we used to do things like, so for instance, if it was back in those days, most organizations, big organizations, had an IBM mainframe of some kind. You go, right, you're using IBM, we're using Kix, which is a database program, and you're going to use an IBM PC, and you're going to do this and this and this. Once you've made those decisions, everybody just fell into line, because it all just worked seamlessly, because you didn't actually communicate using your equipment with anyone outside the organization.
Yes.
Yeah. Once the internet came along and we started to communicate with technology to technology, the whole thing starts to become quite difficult, because if we choose an Apple environment and you choose a PC environment or a Windows environment, then you start to get these problems of interfaces that don't quite work. Yeah.
Yeah,
and then Google stick their oar in and put their bloody stupid Google Docs, which I just think is rubbish. Yeah, they stick that in there as well. So all of a sudden, you get people sending you Google Docs, you get somebody else sending you, Apple iCloud, and then Microsoft breathes in and go, well, can you do this? And all of a sudden, you're kind of scrabbling around trying to get these things to talk to each other.
Yes, and that's probably the hardest.
And that's the hardest bit, I find.
Yeah, and I do find the hardest sometimes you'll get a crossover where companies will like use Gmail and then use the Office Suite.
Yeah.
And they're like, but... And it does work, but it makes life a lot more complicated.
Yeah.
It does. So, you know, there's things like that can make more things harder for you.
Yeah.
So, there's often a bit of a conversation before we start about what people need and what their requirements are. But I generally find that most people, once we get started, it is all about just building their confidence, getting them to understand, and just getting them to understand what they need to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, once they're up and running, hopefully they'll go away feeling a lot more confident. I think the other problem is, going back to what you were saying, Paul, is that now there's so many apps you can download.
Mm.
So they might say, oh, we want you to use this. And somebody will say, well, have you used this app? This is really good. You know, we've got this app for note taking and this app for to do and this app. And you end up with, and this must be quite a nightmare for large, you know, companies using different apps and people having stuff on Evernote or To Do or OneNote, and it's all over the place.
I'm pretty guilty for that. I've got like probably about 20-30 different apps for different things, and I'm just like, which one do I use for what?
Yeah. People send you stuff without really thinking about it. I got one yesterday. I got somebody sent me a PDF. I'm speaking at an event, and they said, can you fill out your menu on here? Well, no, you've sent me a PDF. I can't edit it.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ah, right. Okay. You want me to print it off, fill it in, photograph it, and send it back? Oh, if you wouldn't mind. You go, really?
And if you want to write on it, you've either got to pay into something that allows you to.
Yeah. So.
I tell you one thing I do as well, is I say to people, what do you want to achieve with this?
Yeah.
So, like with a spreadsheet, what are you wanting to achieve? You know, a document, what are you wanting to achieve with it? People don't think about the end game.
Yeah.
You've got to think and plan that before you just send it out there.
Yeah. I think it was you that mentioned it. It may not have been, or maybe someone in the brief conversation we had about spreadsheets, or someone that was printing off a spreadsheet, using a calculator, working out the numbers, and then typing them into the spreadsheet.
I had somebody on my course, this was a couple of years ago, and I normally give them practice stuff to do, and this guy, he was working out these calculations in his head as quickly as any of the rest of the group could do a formula. And the problem was, and I could get it, he couldn't understand why he would use a spreadsheet.
Yeah.
He said, well, I can work it in my head. But the problem was, not everyone's a mathematician like that was.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
So, if our maths is that good, probably we won't need spreadsheets.
Sure. I mean, although there is a rationale behind a lot of the spreadsheets, because they're data that you're sending to somebody else.
Yeah. And also it's volume.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it can do a lot very, very quickly.
Yeah, and the original, which is why I mentioned VisiCalc in the first place. The original reason that VisiCalc took off in the way it did and became this made the spreadsheet ubiquitous was because it was a planning tool.
Yeah.
So basically, I could write a spreadsheet that said, if we sell so many of these at such and such a price, we're going to make this amount of money. I'd send it to my boss, and he'd go, well, if I change the formula, so if I said we're going to make half as many but charge twice as much, we'd make this, and send it back. And you go, yeah, but if you do that, you'd have to add, you know. So it became a planning tool that where you could change the formulas to see what ifs.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the fundamentals of a spreadsheet, isn't it? It's being able to plan stuff.
Yeah.
And also the fundamentals of what was building up for our computer products.
Absolutely.
But do you come across the problem? So, for example, using all these spreadsheets, and I have this at the moment with my accountant, bless him, that you know, they know how to use it. I know sort of the basics. And then you go in and you try and fill out what you need to fill out, and you end up messing it up because you've ended up deleting a formula that they've embedded.
Yeah.
And because the way somebody might use it, they're really good with it. But when they pass it on to their clients, they're not educated on that as well as they are.
Yeah.
And then that becomes a big issue.
And that is one of the things where I would come in, because, you know, it's about getting, first of all, some people don't understand the spreadsheets they get to them. And that's quite, there's nothing wrong with that. But people don't think to explain it. People don't future-proof their spreadsheet. So they wouldn't say, you know, they get someone in and this guy, you know, or girl writes loads of macros, writes a really complicated spreadsheet.
Mm.
and they're the know-it-all, they know everything, and everyone uses it, and then they leave. And they don't tell anyone how to do it. So they've got this fantastic all singing, all dancing spreadsheet that doesn't actually, that nobody knows how to use, and probably the same situation in your instance. So I think the fact that people need to know how to fill them in, and I said to people on my course yesterday, I said, if you don't do anything, when you go away and you open up a spreadsheet, just have a look round. Just look at it. Just see what they've set up. You know, they've got a formula. Just take 5 minutes and just have a nose. And I just try and show them what goes on in the background. Because I think that if they get that, even if they don't do anything with that information, they might understand it. So I'm really about people understanding it, not just opening them up. They've got to understand it. And that is one of the ethoses I try and get across to people.
Absolutely. So we kind of talk quite a lot about spreadsheets. I'm sure you do other stuff, and I just want to explore the other stuff that you work with. I guess email is the second, you know, outlook you were talking about.
Email, getting your inbox set up a little bit smarter, some of the tips and tricks. We do a lot of shortcuts, say time saving on the devices. Word, I think Word gets a bit of a bad press. People say, oh, you know, Word's really easy and it's really rubbish. But I think when you use it properly, you can actually structure a document, do a table of contents, and you can move large chunks of stuff around without copying and pasting. So there's a lot more to Word than we think. PowerPoint, you know, so, and then there's the whole cloud based sharing, which is a lot of what I do now. You know, collaborating on Teams. I know Paul talked about Teams and wasn't keen on it.
I hate Teams.
Oh, Teams is fantastic. If you use it as a company tool, where you're all using it, it's fantastic. And you can, I mean, the problem is we can't keep emailing documents to each other forever and ever because there's too many. So Teams tries to avoid that.
But what you said earlier on is entirely the point. It depends entirely what you're using it for. So I use Zoom for a particular reason. And I only have one application for it.
That's it. And I totally get that. And I think that's a good idea.
My problem is when I interact with other companies, this is the point I was making earlier, they make you use their infrastructure. And it's, you know, it's not my infrastructure. So now I've got...
You're forced to.
And also that would drive me up the wall as well.
And you know, the problem with these smartphones, and I was talking about this the other day, it's like parking apps. No two councils next to each other use the same parking app.
You've got
seven blooming parking apps all on your phone. And then when you look at it, four of them are owned by the same company anyway, which is bonkers. Years ago, I worked in banking, and I've been around a long time because I'm really old.
He's such a dinosaur, isn't he?
Yeah, I'm more than that. I was before the dinosaurs. But I was working in banking in the very early days of the invention of ATM machines. And the banks got together and said, which way do we go with this? We can all have our own ATMs. Or we can share. And there was a thing called Link.
Which still exists.
It still does exist. There's still a Link thing. And the whole idea behind Link was that each of the banks would develop their own ATM machine, but Link would tie them all together so that you could use any machine. But then as things evolved, we went, well, we don't even actually need to do that. All we need to do is talk to each other. So, in fact, you can use any ATM. You don't need the Link system. Any ATM, if you go up to a Lloyds Bank ATM, you can use a Barclay card in it. And they worked that out a long time ago as being the easiest way to do it. Now, it helped because there's a banking infrastructure, which is called settlement, where all these things are settled at the end of a settlement period. So as far as the banks are concerned, if you take money from a Lloyds bank using a Barclay card, it's settled at the end of the settlement period. So they don't do it automatically. It's not done in real time. At the end of a settlement period, they'll go, right, you took 48 million from Barclays into Lloyds, and you took 39 million from Lloyds into Barclays, so I owe you
that amount.
3 million. Here it is.
I like that.
So it's just settled. It's settled at the end as a totalisation thing. But coming back to parking apps, but you know, you think to yourself, but how difficult is it to make all the parking, you know, so you have one parking app and then you just share the data and the cost between you, you know, because I don't know about you, but my phone is so full of apps and it just drives me potty even trying to find the app I want.
And I've got some parking apps I can't even locate.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
No, I think you might be onto something there, Paul.
Okay, so talking about email, and again, I'm going to have a bit of a go at Mike. In my main company, we use Outlook.
Mm.
Okay. And the problem I have with that is it's a reasonable product, especially the web-based version of it, so it makes it fairly easy. But they keep interfering. They keep doing stuff that I don't want them to do, yeah? I go in and I'm trying to look for something and I found that Microsoft has decided to put it in a conversation thread. I don't want it in a conversation thread.
No, I'm totally with you. And one of the things we actually do is sometimes we'll just go in and we'll say, right, switch off that, switch on that, take that off, because some of the ways they introduce this focused inbox.
Oh no, that
and
drives
the first
me poppers.
Thing I did is say, switch off your focused inbox. Yeah. Why? You know, so there are some things that drive us up the wall.
Absolutely, and that focused inbox as well, it drove me potty because I didn't realise it was doing it. And then I eventually, having spent 3 hours on Google finding out about it,
that's a bit of irony, isn't it? But you Google it to try and find out how to get rid of the focused inbox.
Yeah, exactly. I find out how to do it. I turn it off. A week later, it's back on because our servers crashed and they were reset. For goodness sake. We've talked about spreadsheets. We talked about email. Back in the day, there were three main products, which was word processing, spreadsheets, and databases.
But we don't
talk about databases very often now. Back in my day, the database element was the one that was used more than anything.
Yeah.
Because I'm so old that I remember that word processing was very newfangled because you used to get dedicated word processing machines.
Yes, you did, didn't you? Yeah,
from Wang and
IBM Display Writer.
Amstrad. But you basically bought a word processing machine, which was a dedicated terminal, keyboard, and software, and printer, all in one. And then the very first word processing program was a thing called Electric Pencil. Which became WordStar, which eventually became WordPerfect.
WordStar, my goodness. Yeah.
And then WordPerfect.
I'm lost now.
WordStar, you needed all these obscure commands to do things.
Yeah.
That you're like, why? Why would you even use that?
Yeah. But the big thing that people used was Access Database from Microsoft. And I used a thing called Info Manager, which was a PC-based database, which was fancy. It was a relational database, but enabled you to build quite complex databases. And I built quite a few complex databases using that product. But then all of a sudden that kind of faded away, and you don't really hear of people doing a lot of database work anymore, do you?
That's really interesting, Paul, because the database is one of those things. Microsoft Access was a fantastic program, and it still does exist, actually. They pulled away from it for a long time, but then I think they've started to go back to it. I think there's a kind of call to go back to it because it's so good. And I think they bought Access off a different company, and then nobody developed it, but I think I don't know, I might see a comeback. It is so good, and I must admit, all my stuff's on Microsoft Access. It is. So, watch this space. It might come back.
Cool. Okay.
Things do come around, don't they?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's
they
like
do.
Fashion.
Yeah.
I think, as you said, there's a space for there's a gap in the market for it, and it hasn't been replaced.
Yeah.
I think one of the problems was that a lot of users could develop Access, and you had that same old problem. People develop it, major databases, and clear off, leave the company, and nobody knew how to use it. So it was kind of midpoint between like your developer and your end user, and a lot of companies got stuck with that, and I think Microsoft tried to address that, but now I think, you know, maybe we'll see a comeback because it has got a use.
I have one. I developed a database for a small company. It was quite a large database. But one of the problems I encountered was in rounding up errors. in money, which is a ubiquitous problem. And I found some obscure way of solving a rounding up error. I can't even remember what it was now. And I implemented it in the database. And then I left the organisation that I'd done that for. About 5 years later, somebody contacted me and they went, how does this rounding up thing work? Because I'm going, well, I don't remember.
I know,
well, we need to
worse.
Change it.
Yes. yeah. That is the thing, isn't it? You do this really complex thing and you're like, oh, okay, I can't remember how we did it.
Yeah.
I must admit, can I just mention, there is an Excel, part of Excel, called Power Query. And if you're out there and you're using a lot of data, Power Query is... not new to Excel, it's been there for a long time, but it's fantastic. Right. So if people want to talk to me about Power Query, it will take like columns and columns of data and just extract that information in a query in minutes, and
right,
it lives
okay.
in Excel.
Right.
So
okay.
have a look at it. It's in the data menu.
Okay, cool. So there's loads of stuff happening. I've you know, what I like that I've heard from you the most is that, and this kind of rings a bell with me, is it's really focused on what it is you're trying to do. Because these products are general products, aren't they? They're products made for a wide range of uses and are therefore fairly complex.
Yes, yeah.
But most of us only use a subset of any of these products
for
whatever
totally.
We're going to do. So that's the bit that we're all trying to learn, rather than all the flashy stuff. Although then, of course, then somebody comes along and goes, you know you can make that red. And we go, oh yes. I've never thought of that before. I need to make that red.
we were inserting 3D dinosaurs in Excel the other day.
Oh, were you?
Oh, awesome.
I'm still red. I'm still making it red. That's the limit of what I can do. For you, Helen, as a trainer, presumably you have to keep on top of every new thing that comes out with all of these things.
Yeah, I do. I have to kind of keep up to date. And there's quite a big band of trainers around. You know, it's quite a good community. So, yeah, there's a lot of people who I learn from. I do watch hours and hours of YouTube videos, so you don't have to. That's what I basically do. I go and watch tons of YouTube, so you don't have to suffer.
Right.
because there's, everyone says you can do that, but you know, who really wants to watch 8 hours of Power Query? You don't, do you?
Yeah.
So I will tell you what you need to know.
Right.
It is. But yeah, a lot of it is keeping myself up to date with the various packages, keeping an eye on what's new, looking at different updates. And also, I pick up things from companies. I mean, we were in a company the other day, and you know, one of the biggest problems was they were trying to work with dates, and she copied dates down, and the dates kept changing. And I showed her a way of doing it, and she said, oh, that just saves me so much time. Mm. So, you know, sometimes it's the little things that make a difference.
Without a doubt, there are so many small things, either tricks or tips that you don't know, where you go, well, you don't need to do that, you know, because a lot of us get into the habit of doing something because it's the only way we worked out how to do it. Yeah. So you go da 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 da. Right, now it says Bing. Great. And you go, you do know there is a Bing command. No.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And I suppose it's also trying to get used to all the shortcuts and like the F1 keys and the Control V or Control C.
Yeah.
You know, because some people don't even want to do that, or they're like, oh, I can't reach the keys, and you're starting to spread your fingers. And
also, I mean, some people aren't so familiar with the keyboard. Mm. You know, it's like there's a lot of keys on the keyboard that I'll say, oh, this one, and they'll go, oh, I've never used that one before. You know, so it is sort of making people look at your keyboard and say, actually, you've got quite a lot here. There is a lot of commands there that we don't realise we've got at our fingertips.
It's funny you say about keyboards. That was one of the early jokes about working in tech support. You get a phone call. Someone go, my computer stopped working. You go, right, well, what's happening? Well, nothing. Okay. Well, press any key. Oh, I haven't got one. I beg your pardon? We go, no, I haven't got any key. We go, no. Press any key. No, I haven't got one.
You're going to have a special key with that name on it.
Yeah. Oh, we used to do that sometimes. We write any on a key. Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, there was the escape key to get out.
Yeah, exactly.
And the next person who got the escape key was the next person to leave.
Yeah. Of course, that's why every tech support in the world says, turn it off, turn it on.
Yeah.
It's far easier.
Actually, Paul, that's how you fix it. That's just your fix. That's all you need to know. Yeah. I don't even need to do this. Just turn it off and on again.
And what if that doesn't work?
I fire the window. I didn't say that, by the way.
In 1974, right, I was working on a Honeywell mainframe, okay, and it was old then, this mainframe, and I'd been working on it for quite a long time, and I knew its idiosyncrasies, and we were there one day, and it crashed, yeah, and the boss of the company came in, and he went, oh, brilliant, it's been crashed again. I went, well, you know, to be honest, you really ought to invest in a new machine, bearing in mind that you're talking millions, you know, back then, you know, you, for a machine even of that size, you were looking at $1.5 million. I said, you really need a new machine, and he went, oh. I said, but anyway, I can get it going for the moment. Oh, would you? Yeah. So I opened the door to the storage area, and I got a rubber mallet, and I go, bang, and I shut the door, and it comes back up. What did you do? I said, I hit it with a mallet. And he said, no. I said, yeah, no. Obviously, you saw me do it. And he said, but I don't understand. I said, well, basically, it's so old that the card slots into the bus have got loose.
Oh, no.
Right, and when it gets hot, it pops the card out, so I just banged it back in. All right.
You do that with TV sometimes. Well, the old TVs, really heavy
valves. Yeah. But
you
the
just
old
bang it on the side.
Radios and TVs with valves, when they overheat, the valve would pop out.
Yeah,
and that was the whole point about banging it, because the valve would pop out and it would it wouldn't come right out, but it would just not make a connection. You bang it and it would reseat itself. The other easy way to do is let it cool down and it would go back anyway. But
Yeah, I'm not sure that's the modern way to go.
It doesn't really help anymore. No, it's all a bit solid state now, isn't it? Yeah.
They just say to you now, get a new one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, nowadays you can afford to buy a new one, can't you? Because it's cheaper than repairing an old one.
Yeah,
absolutely. Helen, that's been fascinating talking to you about this. And, you know, it really is important from a productivity point of view as much as anything else. You know, we are all totally dependent on technology nowadays. You know, if we can make productivity use of a product, then we really should be. And what you're doing is helping us do that.
Yeah, that's it.
So a huge thank you for that. If people want to find out about VUIT training, what's the best way to do that?
There's a couple of ways. You can go to our website, VUIT training.co.uk. You can email me, helen@vuittraining.co.uk. I've got a YouTube channel, actually.
Blimey.
Hopefully my videos aren't long and boring.
I've got someone to watch that for me.
And I've also got, on Facebook, I've got a hints and tips page, so a group. So if you wanted to join that, you're quite welcome to join it. People sometimes put questions on there, and it's a really good way of, if you're not sure about doing something, how to do it. And if you're interested in asking about courses, just drop me an email.
Fantastic. Helen, thank you so much for that. It's been a real pleasure talking to you. Keep on doing what you're doing, because it's incredibly important. I've got a real thing about technology. I started my first job in IT. It was a computer operator in 1970. And I've worked in it a long, long time. And technology bothers me these days, because with so much of it, so much of the everyday things we do is now technically linked, but we don't have a way of interrupting it from a humane point of view.
You come to me for that.
Yeah. Well, the trouble is, you see really daft things, and you. I've got a problem with a particular bank at the moment that I've banked with them for years, and they won't talk to me. And they won't talk to me because they claim I don't know my date of birth.
Yes, I've had that
as well. Have you had that? Yeah. They have copied my date of birth down wrong, so they can't talk to me because I can't tell them what they've got in their database.
And I think that's so frustrating, isn't it?
I'm going, yeah, they go, what's your date of birth? So I tell them, and they go, no. I go, no, it was, I was there.
I know when I was born.
And I go, no, you're wrong. And I go, I'm not. you know, I'll go, do you want me to send you my birth certificate? No, because you've got to tell us what we've got in our database, otherwise we're not talking to you. But you've copied it down wrong. And you see that all the time. I've got hundreds of examples of the opposite of what you're doing, Helen, where companies are wasting resources all the time by having technology that's got a minor bug in it, but they have no way of interrupting it to fix it.
And I think a lot of time companies think technology is the answer, but
it's not.
It isn't the be all and end all, is
exactly.
it?
No. And you need some humanity in there. You need someone to come along and provide an interrupt.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go, no, actually, we've got this wrong and we need to do it. Very quickly, I got a text one day from a company, a very well-known company, saying, your emergency engineer will be with you at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning. Well, I haven't ordered an emergency engineer. So I ignored it. And then I got a really rude text saying, we turned up and you weren't there. It's important that we fix this problem because it's dangerous. Can you please be there at 4 o'clock? And I go, I didn't know you are. So I had to waste my time finding out who it was. Home serve. Okay. I find a phone number. I'm not a home serve customer even. I find a phone number. I ring up and it says, what's your customer number? I haven't got one. So, and it's an automated service. What's your customer number? I haven't got one. There's no way around that.
No, and then you're caught in a loop, aren't you?
You're in a loop. So eventually I go, the only way I can do this is to say I want to become a customer. So I phone the sales line and I get a human. I said, I don't really want to become a customer. And I go, well, why are you ringing? I go, because I've got this problem and I can't get through. Well, it's nothing to do with us. We're sales.
Oh, you know. You sound a bit Homer Cervic.
Yeah, it's just crazy stuff.
I think the trouble is as well, and you also get the other side, like the scamming side, where you get these texts and you think, oh, I'm too, you don't want to reply because it might be a scam, or, you know, it might be one of those post office ones that says you've got delivery. So you start thinking it's a scam now.
Yeah.
You can't win.
I had a brilliant one. I don't mind naming names here, Santander Bank, you idiots. Yeah, I get a phone call, my phone rings, and it says, this is Santander Bank, we need to talk to you urgently, please can you input your account number? I go, no. Put the phone down. 18 times my phone rang in one afternoon with this same message. So eventually, I do everything on Twitter, I go to Santander Bank, someone's trying to scam me, I think you ought to know about it, and da-da-da. So they said, can you DM us? So I DM, and they went, no, it's us.
But how did you know?
I went, you're mad. I said, you're insane. No. Why are you asking me for something that you claim you're never going to ask me? Yeah, well, that's true, but we really need it in this instance.
No.
Well, how would I know?
Yes.
How do I know that, you know, you're not... How do I know? That's just bonkers. It's just lazy bonkers. Yeah, right. Why can't you just get a human to ring me? Yeah, why do you have to get a machine all the time?
Would you remember those things called bank managers?
Oh, yeah, blimey, yeah.
Back in the day, we used to have one. At least they know about your business. And now we get a call centre in Bristol or Glasgow.
Well, loads of places you can't even open a bank account. In the bank, you've got to do it online.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy. And then apparently now... they moved the goalposts. Once they paid out all the bankers, gave them those millions of pounds, you then had to be turning over £1 million to go over a bank manager. And they found a few people were. Then they moved it to 10 million.
Yeah.
And that's 30 million. For a small business, you have to be doing 30 million before you get a bank manager.
Exactly.
I mean, it's just crazy.
Yeah.
Absolutely crazy.
Absolutely.
God, we're on a rant here.
but this is the problem, isn't it?
We need a bit of humanity. You're absolutely right.
Technology is fantastic until it goes wrong, and then you're in big trouble. Yeah, and you get stuck in a deadly loop.
Do you think some of it is also lazy programming?
Oh, it is. Yeah, it's poor management. It's lazy and it's poor management. You know. Years ago, are you familiar with IVR boxes, the interactive voice response boxes? So when you call a telephone number, it says press 1 if you want to poke in the eye, press 2 if you want.
And if your voice doesn't sound right, you can't.
Yeah, exactly. I was hired by one of the world's biggest manufacturers of IVR boxes, and they were getting loads of grief from their customers, and they said about their own tech support. And my report said, well, the trouble is you're using your own product, yeah? You're using your own IVR box and you don't know how to use it, and you made it. And they went, what? I said, have you ever rung your own box? No. Try ringing your own box. So the MD rang the box, and after about 2 minutes, he went, hold on a minute, and he put the phone down, and he rang someone else. And a bloke was in the room, and he answered his phone. He went, yeah. He went, I've got a problem. I went, you see what you've done there, yeah? You've circumvented your own system because you know how to by ringing directly the tech guy, but your customer can't do that.
Yeah, you can't.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, at what point did you ever try this as a customer? Yeah, no, we never have. Yeah. Really? And that's the problem. It's you know, once you've got a technical solution, they just leave it and expect it to work without, you know, ever trying it themselves. Crazy.
It is, isn't
it?
Being
the customer's shoes.
Oh, yeah.
That's what you need to trial.
Absolutely.
I normally forget what's in the menu. You know, when they give me the menu out, you think, I can't remember what number I needed to press.
Yeah. I'll just press any number. I'll press random numbers. I don't care. Yeah. Anyway, we've reached the end of another show. I want to say a huge thank you to Nick and Anthony from What's Wrong in Kent, from Helen Folks from View IT Training, to my absolutely stunningly brilliant co-host, Zeenat Narani. We'll be back with another show next week. We'll see you all soon. Bye for now.
The Business Bunker with Paul Andrews.
This is Channel 2. What's that?